David, thank you very much for doing this. Hope you had a great Father's Day. How are you?
Good, good. Yeah, happy Father's Day to you, and nice to be with you guys.
Yeah, we're not starting where we should when it comes to hockey because our listeners have sent in text after text. We opened this show today, David, talking about goalie controversy, if there is one, isn't there, Robin Leonard's comments and overtime heroics and the Fleury gaffe. The second we brought up officiating, our text message inbox just started getting littered with text. This is not a good thing for the sport, is it?
No, I mean, it's not the narrative the NHL wants to be talking about right now. And, you know, it's kind of in the forefront. And I'm sure in your market, too, it's reminiscent. People are having flashbacks to 2011 when, you know, there was a lot of dissent against what was going on in the Vancouver-Boston Stanley Cup final and all the antics we saw from Marchand and a few of the other guys and how the Sedins were being treated really throughout the postseason. So sure, it's brought up some wounds in Vancouver. But yeah, you know, it's not the storyline. We want to be talking about, you know, Robin Leonard. We want to be talking about these great series that could be both staring down, you know, with game seven. They're into the best of three situations right now. So it's not the storyline that we want to be digging into, but it's sort of unavoidable based on, you know, a few factors. Obviously, the missed slash by Marchessault in game three that ultimately didn't prove costly. Montreal won that game. But then the same two officials, and I think this might have to do with COVID, the fact the border situation, everything else, the exact same two officials, Chris Lee and Dan O'Rourke, had to go out there and officiate game four and, you know, kind of put them in a bad spot because there was already this sentiment that, man, these guys are making mistakes and there's some incompetency and everything else going on there. So it sort of started out a discussion that's continued on and people weren't happy with how, you know, yesterday's game was managed or some would say mismanaged by the officials. So that's where we're at, unfortunately. That's why I guess that's what we're talking about, right?
Yeah, unfortunately. And we will get to some of the other hockey stories as well. But when we get to this point of the playoffs, it seems we get there every single year with this conversation. The pushback that comes from traditional hockey fans is we don't want to see 10 power plays a game for each team. That's not the type of hockey I want to see. My argument is players will adapt. They're adapting right now, aren't they, David? Because they're adapting to what some people are calling jailhouse rules, whatever you want to call it. They'll adapt on the other side. Why does this fear exist that if the officials enforce the rule book a little more strictly, that all it's going to be is power play after power play after power play?
Yeah, you know what? I don't even know if it's a matter of them having to be stricter. I think it's more a matter of it having to be consistent. And you know, you can't like last night, you can't watch Nick Suzuki get punched in the face in a scrum situation. You're standing 2 feet from that. You don't call anything. And 3 minutes later, you're calling a ticky-tack slash, you know, a ticky-tack hold. The players are going, well, wait a minute. A minute ago, it was okay to punch a guy in the face, and now it's not, and now I can't do anything. It's got to be consistent. No one wants to sit and watch power play after power play. I think that's a very fair and true statement. But I do at the same time think the players expect consistency. So they know where the standard is. They know where the bar is, where the line is that's been drawn, and to not step over that line. And if they step over that line, they understand there'll be consequences. I think that's the bigger issue, continuity, consistency. So players just aren't taken by surprise when certain things are getting called and certain things aren't, and fans for that matter.
Talk about being surprised. I don't know about you, David, but I sure was when I saw this in the morning the tweets coming out that Robin Lehner was in the starter's net for Vegas, and then we see that he started last night's game, looked very well, looked very good. I got beat on that one shot by Paul Byron. But what was your first reaction to it? Did you believe the Pete DeBoer, Marc-Andre Fleury needed some rest argument, or do you think there was a little bit of that gaffe in his decision, or the gaffe that Marc-Andre Fleury made leading to his decision?
Well, you know what, Karen, I was really surprised, I'll be honest with you. I just thought that, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury has done so much in his career and, quite frankly, has played very well through this postseason. I mean, he has a 1.97 goals against, a save percentage well above .900. Yes, he had some really over-the-top mistakes for an elite goaltender in the last few games, but I also thought the biggest issue surrounding Vegas was the lack of scoring. And quite frankly, it still is an issue. Yes, they won last night's game, but you know, they barely had any scoring opportunities. They were able to find a way to win. When I look at, you know, games two and three, do I put that on Marc-Andre Fleury? No, I don't. I look at that as a lack of an inability to score. And if you want to go back to what Scott was talking about with the power plays, Vegas has had, I believe, 11 power plays now or 12 power plays. They haven't scored with the man advantage. I mean, that's what, to me, is the bigger concern surrounding Vegas. So when I saw Robin Leonard was getting the start, I looked at it as a bit of a panic move. I just thought, wow, Marc-Andre Fleury has done everything to give Vegas the ability to win these games. The fact that, you know, Alex Tuck could have had a hat trick in game three and just couldn't bury it on Carey Price, that's not on Fleury. And I know he had the egregious error there that tied the game with less than 2 minutes left. I'm not discounting that with Marc-Andre Fleury, but I did feel, you know, he's a battler. He's a guy who the team will play hard, you know, behind. He's a guy you want to have in those pressure situations, a three-time cup winner, a Vezina finalist. So I was surprised, but, you know, it obviously worked out. And now the interesting question is, will we see Marc-Andre Fleury start game five? And there's a lot of speculation that, you know, that was about rest, and now he's rested, and now you can put a rested Marc-Andre Fleury in for game five. So maybe this will all be, you know, a method to the madness that, you know, Peter DeBoer has been to the Stanley Cup final a couple of times with different teams, so he knows a lot more about his goaltending situation than I ever will. But I'll be honest with you, I was definitely very surprised to see Robin Leonard start game four.
And I mean, I don't think you could probably go wrong with either of them just based on the numbers you've thrown out. And we saw Pete DeBoer ride Robin Lehner last year in the bubble. They signed him this past offseason to that big deal. David, assuming that he's going to be the guy moving forward, it's just Marc-Andre Fleury took the starter's net this season and never really looked back when Robin Lehner was hurt. So I don't think there's any probably a wrong decision for Pete DeBoer going forward.
No, well, here's the thing. The other thing, you know, and I forgot to mention this, the other thing that sort of struck me wasn't just that Marc-Andre Fleury has played well enough for them to win, but it's that Robin Leonard was injured at the end of the year, and yesterday marked his second start in 41 days. It wasn't, you know, when you'd run out Marc-Andre Fleury for all those games, the one time you played Robin Leonard, your team got shelled 7-1, and listen, that wasn't really on Leonard. The whole team wasn't there for that game one versus Colorado. But I sort of said, wow, you're rolling the dice, in a sense, with a guy who's barely played in essentially 6 weeks. But, you know, again, Peter DeBoer has a better sense of his goaltending tandem, how tired they are, mentally, physically fatigued they might be, and the mood of his team. And maybe there was some sort of loss of confidence on some level with Marc-Andre Fleury, who's made a few uncharacteristic mistakes along the way during this postseason. I'm interested to see. I'm going to stop guessing, because when I guess wrong. So I'm really interested to see him. Peter DeBoer is not letting us know anything either. So he likes the mystery involved there. You know, he's holding his cards close to his chest, and it'll be interesting to see either way. As you said, there's two good options. I won't be surprised if we see Fleury, and quite frankly, I won't be surprised if we see Leonard, just knowing that he won the last game and the team obviously is confident behind him as well.
Will you be surprised if you see another COVID positive test, David? We've got a coach who's missing right now in Dominique Ducharme. General manager and Kelly McCrimmon as well. Those people are around the players on both teams. They're around the staffs. Personally, I'm just hoping we get COVID reports that come out each day that say nothing to report here.
Yeah, I mean, surprise won't be the first word. If we start to hear there's more tests, you know, positive, I'll just be so disappointed. We've come so far, and first of all, you want everyone's personal life and the safety, you know, their personal safety to be in check. But it's, you know, the optics weren't fantastic either. You know, Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee, everyone's, you know, sitting there in the suite, no masks on, and in Vegas, and then coming to Montreal. And, you know, the optics weren't good. And, you know, we're not through this yet. I'd really hope, you know, we can survive the next 3 weeks, get through this without any more positive cases, and keep getting guys, you know, fully vaccinated, you know, inside and outside, you know, the fan base and the arena, and, you know, move forward in a better way. Because, you know, again, these aren't the storylines we want to be talking about, positive cases and officials. And I want to talk about the great hockey we're seeing and the great battles and the fact that we're down to four teams. And there's a lot of interesting storylines, but, you know, this is sort of the time we're in right now to have to deal with these other issues outside of the game.
No question. David Amber, Hockey Night in Canada, joining us here this morning on Rintoul and Sermon. All right, let's talk about that other series that resumes tonight, Game 5 between the Lightning and the New York Islanders. Has it been entertaining?
It's been competitive, and maybe that's a euphemism. you know, New York isn't there. You know, it's a results-oriented business. what I love to see back and forth, end-to-end action. You know, like we saw in a few of the Florida-Tampa games were phenomenal. We had a 6-5 game in that series. You know, sort of last shot wins, great comebacks, and incredible offensive skill. You know, New York isn't built that way. That's not what they do. And surprisingly, they've scored a great number of goals this postseason, but they know their one chance against Tampa is to slow things down. It's not going to be a track meet. It's going to be, you know, really make the other team earn every inch of the ice, and it's going to be tight checking. And that's what we're seeing. Is that the most entertaining brand of hockey? No. No, it's not. And, you know, I don't think it's necessarily what everyone wants to see, but is it effective? And we've seen that it is effective. You know, they've eliminated Sid and Malkin. They've eliminated Marchand and Pasta and the guys in Boston. And, you know, if they can somehow get past Kucherov and Point, my goodness, like, you know, they're sort of saying, we're a team, this is how we play, and you're going to adapt to our style. We're not going to adapt to your style. Would I love to see things open up a little bit? Yeah. And if Tampa gets on the power play a few times tonight, it might open up. It might, if Tampa has a 2-goal lead, New York's going to be forced to open things up, and then it might be a bit more of the track meet style that Tampa's very comfortable with. And New York has shown it can be comfortable with, but certainly they prefer to you know, kind of pound you into the ground into a 2-1 game.
Yeah, so maybe it's that, or maybe it's that the Islanders get out to an early lead, because as soon as Tampa decided, okay, we have to let the reins off now, we're not going to play the patient game anymore, that was a pretty fun third period to watch, wasn't it?
It was, and that's a really good point, too, because Tampa, when they sort of say, okay, we need a goal, what are we going to do? They're more than capable of providing that. And they have so many good offensive weapons. I mean, what I think makes Tampa the best team, arguably, in the NHL is just that they can beat you any style you want to go. You know, if you want to open things up, they're comfortable doing that. Against Carolina, that wasn't the series we saw. We saw a very tight-knit series, a bunch of 2-1 and 2-0 style games, and Tampa came out on top. So they're comfortable any which way. But yeah, it would be very interesting if New York does score early, because they're not. This isn't a situation where you can sit on a lead, because Tampa won't allow you to do that. And boy, what we're seeing from Braden Point, by the way, you know, we started out this conversation, and I said I'd love to be talking about these great storylines and not the officials and COVID and everything else. Braden Point, there's few stories better than what he's doing right now. 7 straight games with a goal. He scored in, you know, all different sorts of fashions. They're game-winning goals. They're rush chances. They're, you know, grind them, you know, sort of grind it out, low crease type goals. He can do everything. It's really amazing. And, you know, it's funny, you look back to that RFA group back a couple years ago that was so talked about with Rantanen and Matthew Tkachuk and Mitch Marner and Aho. And, you know, Point, you got to give kudos to Tampa Bay. I believe Point came in at the lowest contract. I know he came in at the lowest contract of those guys. And, you know, right now, if you are putting all those guys up and sort of saying you can choose one, you know, there's a lot of GMs who probably would say, I'll take Braden Point. Top of that list, he's been that good, especially in the postseason.
He is likely to be on Team Canada, or at least a consideration for Team Canada, if the NHL goes to the Olympics next year. I saw news dropping today that they're sending schedules out to teams right now. One of those schedules involves Olympic break. One of those schedules does not involve Olympic break. Where's your level of confidence that it will happen next year?
I think it will. I just think there's too many reasons for it to happen. I think there's a billion plus people in China, and that's an enticing, you know, potential revenue stream for the National Hockey League to want to open up their marketing to. I think there's no better way to market the game than to have the best players in the world on the ice. I think the players are incentivized to go there. They want to go. When you talk to players, the idea of them putting on their country's uniform at the biggest stage internationally to represent their country, that's very enticing to the players. The IOC, I think, would like to have, you know, and the International Ice Hockey Federation would like to have the NHL players there. So I think if everyone's on board, everyone's motivated, I think some of the logistical issues that kept them from going to Pyeongchang in 2018 don't exist here. So I do think it's sort of, there's a lot of green lights ahead, and there should be all systems go. Of course, there's things that can happen, and quite namely, you know, number one problem maybe is this global pandemic, obviously, because there's those issues that are still around us. But I'd like to think that this will get sorted out, and I do believe it will, and I think it'll be an incredible showcase, and it'll be amazing. You know, just the amount of storylines about selecting the teams and who's the favorite, and you know, Canada obviously is generally going to be the favorite in these situations. But, I mean, you look at some of the players out there for the American team and the Russian team and the Swedish team, and you go, wow, it could be very, very competitive. So it'll be really interesting to see.
David, Scott and I were talking before you came on air that the Seattle Kraken made a hire today, or an announcement of a hire. And no, it's not the head coach yet, but it's a great announcement in the fact that JT Brown is joining John Forslund on the broadcast team for the television side. You tweeted out about it here. Congratulations to him. What makes him a good fit for this position?
Well, he's a smart guy. He really analyzes the game at an elite level. He played the game at the highest level there is in the National Hockey League. He, you know, went to a Stanley Cup final with Tampa. He's well-respected and well-liked in the hockey community. It's great. And he gives a different perspective as well. You know, being a man of color, I think he's going to maybe see certain things through a different lens. And I think it's great that, you know, all different fans, whether what they look like or, you know, what their background is, can be represented and sort of see the game, you know, reflecting them a little bit. So I think it's good on all levels. And I think the Seattle Kraken should be really commended. You know, John Forslund, their play-by-play man that they hired, he's sensational as well. They've made a real point of sort of saying, we want to be the best of the best. We're going to try and get the best people possible. And I think they've really been a good blueprint for what a sort of a new franchise is going to be. And listen, the rivalry they're going to have with Vancouver is going to be sensational. I mean, I think that's just going to be a built-in day one, let's get at it. And certainly the Kraken might not have the same success that Vegas Golden Knights have had so quickly, but I just think they're going to be able to sort of build up a fan base and build up sort of an interest in their team from day one that's going to be really a great success story for the National Hockey League. So I'm really excited for them to get cracking, I guess you can say, in October.
Yeah, we've all made the joke so far, and I think we've all applauded many of the hires along the way. It feels like, David, and you tell me if you agree with this, it feels like every time they've made an announcement, whether it's the unveiling of the name, the jersey, the logo, the different hires along the way, it's either been a home run or a triple or a double, but they haven't missed yet, have they?
It doesn't seem that way. And, you know, they've been very thoughtful in their approach. I've talked with Todd Lewicki, and they're reaching out to different people to try and get a sense of what are the best ways to do things. You know, they want to be the best, right? They don't just want to be another team. You know, they're putting this great arena, this great facility together. It's going to be state-of-the-art. And, you know, again, you mentioned even the JT Brown hiring. I mean, there's someone I worked, you know, in the fan inclusion committee with the National Hockey League. JT was on that board as well. And he brought such great ideas, you know, about how to make the game bigger and better for everyone, more inclusive, more diverse, you know, more different, you know, approaches to the game that maybe traditionally have been ignored or just overlooked on some level. So I'm very excited for him to hear his voice and for him to have that, you know, that space to talk. It just speaks again to Seattle really going above and beyond and just saying we really want to make our fan experience unique, and we want to make sure it's a great time and grows really from the grassroots up in the community. So I think it's going to be fantastic. I'm really excited. And, you know, the Kraken, it's still taking me time to get used to the name. I love the color scheme and the jersey and everything else, but the Kraken will take a little bit of time, but it is growing on me. The first day I was like, oh my goodness, but it is growing on me now.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And speaking of excitement, I was excited to hear you on the latest edition of 31 Thoughts, the podcast. I was even more excited when you had an over-the-top reference hearkening back to your arm wrestling days. Like Sly Stallone in that movie, did you have a trucker ball cap that you turned around every time that you had an arm wrestling match?
First of all, let's get this clear. I don't have an arm wrestling background. I had one night where I got in. Elliot basically forced me, belittled me into coming on the podcast and kind of embarrassing myself with this crazy story of having this arm wrestle. It was all in relation, if you haven't heard the podcast, it was all in relation to what happened with Jeff Petrie with those, you know, the crazy blood vessel popping in his eye. And I said to Elliot, we're watching the game, and I said, oh my God, look at that. That's horrific. And I said, you know, that actually happened to me in one eye. And he said, how did that happen to you? And I explained I was in these arm wrestles, and I guess I was overexerting myself and like literally clenching my face so tight in this arm wrestle that I popped some blood vessels in my eye. And he thought it was hilarious. I didn't think it was so funny, but he was like, that is a great story. You've got to share that story. And I was like, okay. So here we are. But No, I didn't. I didn't have the Sly Stallone look or anything like that going. And now I've been, you know, conned into this whole get an arm wrestle with Kevin BX in the future. So now this is not going to go well for me. But oh well, what can you do?
You've got a year to train. You've got a year to train for it. There's going to be charity money on the table, according to what you guys laid out, or at least Elliot laid out and sort of roped you into. But it was a great story. I enjoyed it. And no word of a lie, as things have started to open up out here in the West, first softball game a couple of weeks ago, we had a discussion about over the top at that game. So I was thrilled that you were at least in the exact same parlance that I've been using here lately.
Oh, that is funny, because I haven't thought about that movie in a long, long time. But, that's fine. That's an old-school reference. I'm glad you guys are out there playing softball. We're slowly but surely getting things going here in Ontario as well, and it is good. It really is important. First day of summer, here we go. Let's, you know, try and, in a safe way, get our lives back in order. So it's really good to hear.
Amen. And thank you very much for your time once again. I'm glad you had a great weekend. We'll do this again soon, David. All the best.
Thanks, David.
Yeah. Karen, Scott, thank you guys for having me on, and stay safe and enjoy the games.